Well, thank you very much, Ron, for that introduction and for inviting me. It really is a great pleasure to be here with the Exchequer Club of Washington. Even after 2 years at the helm of the FTC, I'm still really quite amazed at the number of consumer and economic issues that our very diverse and vibrant economy continues to produce. As a law enforcement agency of general jurisdiction, the FTC plays a role in issues that range from competition in gasoline markets to the successful do not call list, from phony dietary supplements to mortgage and debt collection fraud, from pharmaceutical mergers to childhood obesity, from spam to alcohol advertising. And that just really skims the surface. Our agency is small by Washington standards with about 1,100 employees. But I think our size, among other things, allows us to nimbly shift our resources to areas where consumers need us. During the last 2 years, an issue that has risen to the top of our agenda is the security of personal data. Information is the new currency, and it moves across the globe, as you know, in milliseconds through high-speed connections. Magnetic and optical media permit the efficient and cost-effective storage of gigabytes of data, and technological developments continue to emerge at a dizzying pace. And this is really good news for the marketplace and really good news for consumers. With great innovations, though, typically come risks. And fortunately, we as a nation are learning that data security is critical to reaching our full potential in this information economy. The question, though, is whether we're learning quickly enough. Although many organizations are realizing that strong privacy protections enhance consumer trust and satisfaction, surveys continue to present troubling data. The Enterprise Strategy Group recently surveyed 227 IT professionals, and 25% of them characterized their organizations as vulnerable or very vulnerable to a breach. The same number rated their organizations as fair or poor in protecting data. A recent survey from the Small Business Technology Institute provides even more alarming news. Over half of all small businesses in the U.S. experienced a breach within the past year. Nearly 20% do not use virus scanning for email. More than 60% do not protect wireless networks by encrypting, and a full two-thirds do not have an information security plan. Without question, businesses confront many challenges in making their data secure. For example, the use of portable data storage devices, like thumb drives or flash drives and disk-based MP3 players, is emerging as a serious security concern. Now, if you don't know what any of those things are, I can get one of my stepchildren on the phone to tell you exactly what those things are. They allow us to store vast amounts of data on tiny devices that have broad compatibility with computers. I'm betting a number of people in this room, all kidding aside, have used these devices. Yet as they become smaller and cheaper with their increased storage capacity and faster transfer speeds, the potential risks are increasing. They're small and so easy to misplace, and the amount of data that they are holding is astounding. So personal information for hundreds of thousands, if not even millions of people, could fit in a typical USB thumb drive. So IT professionals confront these challenges every day, and fortunately the market is developing solutions. Flash drives now are available with enhanced security features like encryption or biometrics. Software allows information technology managers to control whether an individual user can connect a portable data storage device like an iPod to a company computer. Solutions exist for many of our IT security problems, and more solutions are being developed every day. But the key is we have to use them, and all organizations have a collective responsibility to keep consumers' data secure. At the FTC, our goal is to create a culture of security for sensitive information so that businesses and other organizations, like your government, prevent potentially harmful data breaches. We need to start treating our personal data as we treat our cash, because that's exactly how identity thieves treat this data. In recent years, the Commission has nurtured the development of a set of sensible legal principles with the assistance of industry, consumer groups, and other government agencies, including the banking agencies, with which we work particularly closely on issues like this. The laws and rules we enforce are intended to establish realistic, workable, and enforceable standards that will facilitate rather than inhibit the flow of commerce. Unfortunately, some have been slow to act. Accordingly, over the last 18 months, the FTC has deployed our full arsenal of statutory tools to bring cases against companies that failed to implement reasonable security measures to protect sensitive consumer information. The Commission's enforcement tools derive from Section 5 of the FTC Act, which prohibits unfair or deceptive practices, the Safeguards Rule, and the Fair Credit Reporting Act. The principle that a company should implement reasonable and appropriate security for sensitive information is codified in the Commission's Gramm-Leach-Bliley Safeguards Rule. This rule was issued in May 2002 after a two-year rulemaking process in which the FTC received and analyzed comments from stakeholders in the public and private sectors. The Safeguards Rule requires financial institutions, in our case, that fall within the FTC's jurisdiction, and as you may know, statutes like Gramm-Leach-Bliley basically set out the banking agencies will have such and such jurisdiction and so forth, and then what they tend to say is, anybody who's left who falls within the statute, the FTC will enforce. So really, we do end up with quite a panoply. So in any event, the Safeguards Rule requires financial institutions to implement reasonable safeguards for their data, acknowledging that what is reasonable depends on the sensitivity of the information, the potential risks to the information, and the costs of avoiding those risks. The rule is process-oriented. Firms must evaluate their risks, establish policies to address them, develop a system to implement protections, and review and, when necessary, amend these policies periodically, because, of course, risks evolve over time. When evaluating the reasonableness of a company's information security program, whether within or outside the GLB context, these principles have become our touchstone. In our investigations, we look at the overall security system that the firm has implemented and its reasonableness in light of the size and nature of the business, the nature of the information it maintains, the security tools that are available to it, and the security risks it faces. I emphasize that the standard is reasonableness and not perfection. So the fact that a company suffered a breach does not in and of itself establish that its practices were not reasonable, although it may be evidence of that fact. Indeed, in many investigations, our staff has concluded that although a breach occurred, the company did, in fact, have reasonable procedures in place to safeguard the data under the circumstances. Now, in May, the Commission announced our 13th case involving data security over the last 18 months, Nation's Title Agency. NTA, a privately held company that provides real estate-related services through 57 subsidiaries in 20 states, promised consumers that it maintained physical, electronic, and procedural safeguards. Now, while many of our data security cases emphasize high-tech security issues, this case serves as a reminder not only that securing data in an electronic world is essential, but also that we cannot forget the low-tech. Reasonable security practices include both. And in this case, we first allege that the respondents failed to provide reasonable security for consumers' personal information so that at least on one occasion, a hacker who used a very common website attack was able to obtain access to the computer network. But in addition, we allege that one of the subsidiaries disposed of documents containing personal information by simply tossing the documents into an unsecured dumpster, which then was recorded by a local television camera so that it came to our attention. Bad luck sometimes, you get bad luck. So the complaint states claims for violations of the GLB safeguards rule and privacy rules and under Section 5 of the FTC Act, and those respondents agreed to settle the charges by entering into a consent decree with us that requires them to implement a comprehensive security program and to obtain a third-party audit on their compliance. Now again, no one need worry that the FTC is looking for perfect security or that we're developing a de facto strict liability standard for when a breach occurs, because the cases that we have brought have not been close calls. Another example would be the example of ChoicePoint. In that case, ChoicePoint failed to use reasonable procedures to screen prospective subscribers. You probably know that that ChoicePoint is a data information broker, and they, among other things, sell credit reports on consumers. So they're supposed to screen those who subscribe to their information services, and they didn't. And those failures allowed data thieves to obtain access to the personal information of more than 160,000 consumers, including nearly 10,000 consumer credit reports. And then those thieves, who were a ring of identity thieves, did in fact commit identity theft. So for example, ChoicePoint approved as customers individuals who clearly lied about their credentials. They used commercial mail drops as their business addresses, and they faxed multiple applications from nearby public commercial locations like Kinko's. In that case, we obtained $10 million in civil penalties for violations of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is the highest civil penalty ever levied in an FTC case. We secured $5 million in consumer redress for the identity theft victims, and significant injunctive provisions that require ChoicePoint to implement a variety of new security measures. And I think ChoicePoint is taking that seriously and really working hard now on this, as they should, as should others. Keeping consumers' data secure is also essential for the public sector. I am well aware that the numerous reports of data breaches within the federal government over the past few months have shaken our citizens' trust in our data security. The incident with the highest profile, of course, was the theft of a Veterans Administration laptop and external hard drive that contained personally identifiable information for 17.5 million veterans and active duty military personnel. Now, fortunately, that was resolved on a positive note, with the laptop and hard drive being recovered and the FBI's forensic examination revealing that, in fact, the sensitive files were neither accessed nor compromised. But in any event, and of course, that was not the only breach. I don't mean to pick on just the VA, and in fact, I will reveal to you that the FTC had a laptop stolen a few months ago out of a locked car. The laptop was covered up, but the thieves were targeting the local police told us, people in suits who get out of cars and look like they might have something valuable in the car. That laptop, fortunately, didn't have too much personal information on it. It did for about 110 people, some of whom were defendants and others who were not. But in any event, this is an issue that everyone needs to pay attention to. Fortunately, I think for the federal government, these breaches have inspired very strong responses. So, for example, in August, the VA announced that all of its computers would be updated with enhanced data security encryption systems. At the FTC, we were already undergoing some shifts to new processes. I assembled a group of folks, a group of experts, that took immediate action, reviewing all of the types of data that we have that we use around the agency to do our jobs, and updating all of our procedures and policies regarding maintaining and protecting data. Now, for consumers, trust in an economic medium is critical, whether it be online shopping or online banking, or just the use of credit cards or debit cards. What I say to the staff all the time is that we have to make sure that consumers don't lose faith in the wonderful medium of the internet and all of the wonderful ways now that they can interact in the economic system. Aside from general privacy concerns, consumers whose personal data has been stolen or improperly released are concerned about identity theft, which, as I think we all know now, is a particularly pernicious crime. Like a virus, it's spreading through our economic system, and it strikes randomly and can really inflict a great deal of harm on its victims. According to a San Jose, California consumer who called the FTC's helpline, in just one day, identity thieves opened 9 credit card accounts in her name and incurred $15,000 in charges. Unfortunately, this victim's tale is not unusual, and it's far from the most egregious case. We've had people who have been locked up in jail for the night because of their identity was stolen by a crook, and there really are a lot of quite awful stories. We can't allow consumers' trust to be further eroded. The 1998 Identity Theft Assumption and Deterrence Act assigned the FTC a unique role in combating identity theft and coordinating government efforts. Well, we can't prosecute the crime because we at the FTC don't have criminal jurisdiction, and it is, of course, a crime. We take consumer complaints in and implement the Identity Theft Data Clearinghouse for the rest of the federal government. That's a centralized database of victims' complaints, which is used by 1,300 law enforcement agencies. We assist victims and consumers who wish not to be victims by providing them with information and education, and we educate businesses on sound security practices. On May 10th of this year, the President issued an executive order that created the Identity Theft Task Force, appointing Attorney General Gonzalez to be the chairman and appointing me to be the co-chairman. By creating the task force, which includes representatives from more than a dozen federal agencies, the President has underscored the importance of the government's role in the fight against identity theft and the need to prevent, investigate, and prosecute identity theft crimes and deliver just and effective punishment to those who perpetrate them. So our task force has three primary goals. First, to increase aggressive law enforcement. Second, to improve outreach so that we can better educate our citizens on what they can do to avoid being victimized or what to do if unfortunately they are. And also to reach out to businesses on how they can implement better security measures. And third, to increase federal agency safeguards to better protect government-held data. The task force is working on a coordinated national response to identity theft, and we expect to present a strategic plan to the President in November. Yesterday, you might have seen that the task force announced a series of interim recommendations that we thought we could implement quickly, and it didn't make sense for us to wait until the final November report. This included such things as the development of a universal police report that an identity theft victim can use when they need to present their case to creditors or to the credit reporting agencies that, in fact, this has happened to them and these charges don't actually belong to them. And this might sound like actually a fairly simple thing. Okay, it's a police report. What consumers report when they've been victimized by identity theft is that it's like being victimized twice. Once because of the crime, twice because getting your life back, getting your financial life and your identity back is very tough. It's always going to be tough to some degree because, of course, we now have people who claim that they've been victimized by identity theft to try to get out of paying charges when, in fact, they did incur the charges. So naturally, we understand that creditors and others have to have processes for verifying. This is part of why we're developing this universal police report. Local police departments are very overburdened by lots of crimes, and they sometimes have not given this one perhaps its due. So what this should do is when consumers lodge a complaint with the FTC, they will not only be lodging a complaint, but they can use this universal form, which they can then print off at their homes and use as their police report and take it to creditors and others who need it. We're also in the interim recommendations you might see, we've included a roadmap for dealing with government data breaches and a plan for eliminating the unnecessary governmental use of Social Security numbers. Social Security numbers are the gold standard for identity thieves. That's what they want. Social Security numbers are valuable. That's why we use them in government. That's why you use them in business. But over the years, its use has become so ubiquitous that there are probably some places where we could use a different sort of identifier. And that's what we're going to look at within the federal government. So those are some of the interim recommendations. Now, in my remarks so far, I've mentioned consumer and business education more than once. Time and again, we are faced with law enforcement situations that might have been avoided if consumers were just better informed. My staff gets tired of hearing me say this. Education empowers. And nowhere is it more important than in this fight against identity theft. We're not powerless. There are many steps that can be taken. We have a toll-free hotline and a secure online complaint form. We receive over 15,000 contacts per week from our citizens who have either been victimized by identity theft or wish to avoid it. And callers to the hotline receive counseling from trained personnel in English or Spanish, who advise victims to obtain their credit reports, to request a fraud alert, to contact their creditors, to file their police report. And just a few months ago, we launched a nationwide ID theft education program called Avoid Theft, Deter, Detect, Defend. We're very proud of this program. The materials in it, it's actually an education kit, but it's designed to be used by organizations all over the country to educate small groups of citizens at a time. We call it a turnkey toolkit. It has a comprehensive how-to guide on providing consumer education. So it includes everything from a PowerPoint that's all ready to go, to pamphlets that organizations can use. They can put your own logo on it if you'd like. All those sorts of things so that an organization, whether it's a local Better Business Bureau or a local AARP chapter, can just hold a presentation and use our materials. And it's all quite simple, but to us, it gets out this educational mission that is so important. Now, while we're making progress in creating this culture of data security, some think that more needs to be done and that our work would be hastened through new legislation. In the time we have, I won't go into the details of this. You probably are all pretty familiar with it. Suffice it to say, we have spent substantial time with congressional committees on these issues. I personally have testified several times. And each time we have given some suggestions, but urged caution in developing a legislative solution, because while it is important that sensitive consumer data be protected, it's also important that legislation not unduly interfere with the free flow of data that allows businesses to offer consumers such a wide range of products, services, and payment options, greater access to credit, and faster transactions. What I like to say to people is, okay, you have to be careful, because the first time after a new legislation is passed that a consumer walks into a car dealership on Saturday and can't walk out an hour and a half later with a car fully insured, we will hear about that too. And so this is the trick. We have to have a balanced approach. Well, let me just raise another important issue on our agenda, and then I'll stop and take some questions. This one's making headlines everywhere, which is why I thought I might raise it with you today. It's another privacy issue, and that is the disturbing practice of companies selling consumer telephone records. A number of companies, many of which are online, as you probably know, are peddling cell phone and landline records. According to one website offer, for example, if you provide them with a cell phone number, they will provide you with a list of all outgoing calls in as little as 1 hour. And then they'll provide you with the owner's name, billing address, and home telephone number. So while the acquisition of telephone records, some may say, may not threaten imminent economic harm, nonetheless, the consequences could be quite dire. If you think about, and we've seen some situations like this, an abusive ex-husband who's trying to track down his ex-wife, or an ex-con who's trying to track down the police officer who arrested him. But for most people, the basic issue is just this. It's an intrusion into their personal privacy, and they don't want the world knowing who they called. So to combat this threat, we're actively investigating companies that appear to be unlawfully selling phone records or obtaining consumer phone records by pretexting, which of course is using false pretenses to obtain the information. The way it typically works is that the pretexter calls up the telephone company, pretends to be you, asks for the recent phone bill to be faxed, and this has happened over and over again. So it not only violates, we think, Section 5 of the FTC Act, but it truly undermines consumers' confidence in the marketplace and the security of their information. This past May, the Commission filed 5 cases against web-based operations that obtained and sold consumers' confidential telephone records to third parties, and we're seeking a permanent halt to these sales, and we've asked them to give up the money the court to order them to give up the money that they made through these illegal operations. So we'll stay tuned on those cases. I was wrong. I did have one final thing I wanted to make sure you knew about. One of the FTC's most important functions is to study current and emerging marketplace trends so that we can anticipate their significance for consumer and economic policy. And no area is more intriguing than the intersection of new technologies and their application in the global consumer marketplace. Going forward, issues of data security and privacy are going to continue to play prominent roles as more and more information is stored on the internet. This fall, from November 6th through the 9th, we're going to hear from an array of experts from around the world who've been invited to inform us in public hearings about what they see as the emerging trends, applications, products, services, and issues over the next 10 years. We have named these hearings Protecting Consumers in the Next Tech Aid. And in the preliminary agenda we recently released, you can get a sense of the really, I think, quite exciting issues that we're going to address. what is the real impact for a consumer living and going through their everyday life in this instant information culture? And what does user-generated content mean for marketers? It's a variety of issues. And we know that issues of data security and privacy are going to play a significant role in all of these, in all of these discussions. So the hearings will be held at George Washington University's Listener Auditorium, which is a great forum that's going to provide room for all of us to attend and engage and learn. And then throughout the fall, we'll be featuring live chat, blogs, and other opportunities on our website to learn about and prepare for these hearings. And if you can't make it, we are going to webcast the hearings. So we offer to you an invitation if you're interested. I think it will be very exciting and will help us to set an agenda as we look forward in our work at protecting consumers. So thank you very much for your attention today.